I'm not playing my driveway. We all know what that means. It's time for Drive to Work at Home Edition. Okay, so I haven't done a card by card episode in a while. I tend to do these at home because it's easier for me to read the cards. So in honor of Outlaws of Thunder Junction, I thought I would take one of the outlaw creature types and talk about its history. So I take a look at them. Number one with the most was Rogue. These numbers are pre Outlaws of Thunder Junction. 464 rogues. Way too much to talk about. Number two with 147 was Pirates. Number three with 92 was Warlocks. Number four with 83 was Assassin. And number five with 47 was Mercenary, which is enough that I think I can handle in one episode. So today is all about mercenaries. Okay, so the very first mercenary ever actually shows up in Ice Age. It is a card called Mercenaries. Summon Mercenaries. It is now a human mercenary in Oracle. Okay, so the card says it's a 3/3 for 3 and a white. So for 4 mana, one of which is white, 3/3. And for 3 mana, the next time mercenaries would deal damage to you this turn, prevent that damage. So the idea is it's a 4 mana 3/3, but your opponent can pay to stop it. It's funny looking back, like a hill giant in white is, like, you get a lot of upside nowadays. But back then, it got downside. I know white was a little bit smaller. Even in Ice Age, this was kind of a weak card. And it was a rare, of course. Okay, the next time a mercenary would show up, and the first time it's mercenaries would just summon mercenaries plural, like it was matching the card title. The first time that mercenaries showed up that it wasn't the name of the card, there were two of them in alliances. Rogue Sky Captain and Soldier of Fortune. So Rogue Sky Captain, 2 and a red, flying. I'm going to read you the text as it was printed. At the beginning of your upkeep, you put a wage counter on Rogue Sky Captain. During your upkeep, pay 2 for each wage counter on Rogue Sky Captain, or remove all wage counters for Rogue Sky Captain, and target opponent gains control of Rogue Captain, Sky Captain. So this is kind of a riff on cumulative upkeep. So Ice Age had introduced cumulative upkeep, the same design team, the East Coast Playtesters, who designed that set, designed alliances. And so I think they were trying to make a card where the idea is that of cumulative upkeep, but the downside of the card is your opponent gets control of it rather than it dying. And for that, you get a 3/4 flyer in red for 2 and a red. We don't, these days, I mean, we do flyers in red because we have dragons and phoenixes, but this is the kind of card that probably wouldn't be specifically here. I think the idea that it went back and forth made it feel red, like you exchange control, maybe the chaos of it. Okay, the other card, Soldier of Fortune, red, 1/1, mercenary. Red and tap, target player shuffles his or her library. Okay, bit of piece of trivia on this card. This was one of the very first cards I ever designed. At least, it's in alliances. I think I designed 3 cards this was one of them. A huge mistake. This card probably gets used more to harass people than anything else, to make people shuffle their cards, you know, in formats where they don't want to be shuffling their cards. But anyway, it's one of the first cards I ever made to see print. There's some cards that showed up in Tempest that I designed before this that showed up in Tempest. I mean, I designed those earlier, but this is one of the first cards of my design to make it in. Okay. Next we get to Portal. Portal has a card called Mercenary Knight, 2 and a black. When Mercenary Knight comes into play from your hand, choose and discard a summoned creature from your hand or destroy Mercenary Knight. This is one of the earliest, the idea is that I have to sacrifice a creature as an additional cost. Now obviously it does it as an enter the battlefield effect, basically, rather than as an additional cost. But one of the things that was going on, this was Portal. Portal was really simplistic. It didn't have a lot of things going on. There was only a couple keywords on them. So there was a lot of enter the battlefield effects. In fact, Portal is where, technically, Visions was the first set to have an Enter the Battlefield effect, but Portal made a lot more use of them because the creatures couldn't do all that much. There couldn't be attack triggers or combat triggers, and there wasn't a lot of abilities. So there was a lot of things that played into the when you play the space, or when it comes into play. Now it's the Enter the Battlefield. But anyway, also the idea of I get more, but it costs me a creature. It's 2 black for a 4/4, but I have to sacrifice a creature. Okay, next up we get to Tempest. Douthi Mercenary, 2 and a black for a 2/1. At the time, it was Summon Knight. But I think they later went back and added Mercenary because Mercenary is in the name of the card. In the Great Creature Update, if your name had a creature type in it that made flavor sense, we would put it in. Anyway, so it's got Shadow. So this creature can block or be blocked only by creatures with Shadow. One in a black, Delphi Mercenary gets +1/+0 until end of turn. This card actually saw some play. Basically, in normal play, it was unblockable because these people didn't have Shadow creatures. And so the idea for three mana, you got a 2/1 that you could pump. Anyway, this saw a little bit of play. Okay, now we get into Mercadian Masks. And Mercadian Masks has the lion's share, I think, of the 47 mercenaries. 33 of them come from Mercadian Mask block. Why? Why do they come from Mercadian Mask block? And the answer is, it was a mechanic. An unnamed mechanic, but... basically, a lot of mercenaries had the ability that you could search for mercenaries. And so the idea was some of them searched for rebels, some searched for mercenaries. The rebels went up. It was a small creature that looked for something bigger than it. Mercenaries went down. They were bigger creatures that looked at things that were cheaper than it. Surprise, surprise, rebels were the strong mechanic and mercenaries were the weak mechanic. But anyway, because it was a key part of the set that you could go get mercenaries, there are a lot of mercenaries, like over half the mercenaries in existence. Like I said, there are 54, so 33 of the ones in existence before Outlaws of Thunder Junction are from the set. Okay, Alley Grifters, 1 blood black, 2/2. Whenever Alley Grifters becomes blocked, defending player discards a card from his or her hand. So this basically is something that is, you don't want to block it, because if you block it, it makes them discard a card. Bog Smugglers, 1 blood black, 2/2, Swamp Walk. Swamp Walk was creatures unblockable as long as the defending player controls the swamp. We stopped making, Swamp Walk a while ago. Let's see, other creatures. Highway Robber, 2 black-black. When Highway Robber comes into play, you gain 2 life and target opponent loses 2 life. Misshapen Fiend is a 1 black, 1/1 flying creature. And let's see, Molten Harpy is a flying creature, black for a 2/1 flying creature, and beginning your upkeep, you sacrifice unless you pay 2, so at an upkeep cost. Primeval Shambler, 4 and a black for a 3/3. Black, he gets +1/+1, so it's like a shade, although it's a mercenary, not a shade. Rampant Crawler is a black 1/1 that can't be blocked by walls. Silent Assassin, that's funny, Silent Assassin is a human mercenary assassin. So it's both a mercenary and an assassin. For 3 and a black, destroy target blocking creature and in combat. So if you block it, it can die. Skulking Fugitive, 2 black, 3/4. When it becomes a target of spell or ability, sacrifice it. What we now call the illusion downside. And then Strong Arm Thug, 2 and a black. When Strong Arm comes in play, you may return a mercenary card from your graveyard to your hand. It's a 1/1. So it lets you get back a mercenary. Now, there were a whole bunch of the cards with the mercenary ability. So the mercenary ability is, it was some amount of mana, and search your library for converted mana cost that or less. So for example, Katerin Brute is 2 and a black for a 2/2. 2 tap, search your library for a mercenary card with converted mana cost 2 or less, and put the card into play, then shuffle your library. The way it worked is the amount of mana you had to tap was 1 less. So Katerin Brute cost 3 mana. It could go and get a 2 mana creature, but it cost 2 to do that. For example, Katerin Kidnappers, 2 and a black, 4/2, mercenary, obviously. 3 and a black, search your library for mercenary costs with 3 mana or less. So Katerin Brute got 2, Katerin Kidnappers got 3. Katerin Persuader, which costs black, which is a 2/1, did it for 1. Katerin Enforcer, which was a 3 by 4/3, that sort of had fear, can't be blocked except by artifact creatures and black creatures, was for 4. And the Katerin Slaver was 4 black-black, 5/5 with Swamp Walk for 5. Katerin Overlord was 4 black-black-black, 7/5. You could sacrifice a creature to regenerate it for 6. So basically there were 6 creatures. There was a 1-drop, a 2-drop, a 3-drop, a 4-drop, or sorry, a 2-drop that got 1, a 3-drop that got 2, all the way up to a 7-drop that got 6. Okay, that was Mercadian Masks. Now the mechanic continues on into Nemesis, which is the next set. So Nemesis does a couple things. First off, it introduces for the first time a mercenary that is not... the first mercenary was white. Mercenaries. Rogue Cat, Sky Captain, Scourge Fortune were red. All the ones that I talked about in Mercadian Mass for black. So we, for the first time, get a blue one in Sea Hunter. So Sea Hunter is two blue for a 2/2, and it's three and tap and search for a merfolk. So most mercenaries search for a mercenary, but we made one in blue and one in red. The red one was called Mog Catcher, two red for a 2/2. Each of these costs two colored mana for a 2/2 creature. For three and tap, they went and got, it didn't limit the size. It went and got any merfolk or any goblin. So those, the idea there was they were sort of offshoots of the mercenary mechanic. Once again, the mercenary mechanic wasn't named. Then there's a bunch of new cards in Nemesis. A Phyrexian Driver, 2 and a black, 1/1. When Phyrexian Driver comes into play, all of the mercenaries get +1/+1 until end of turn. So this is like a mercenary type card. We got Phyrexian Prowler, who has 3 and a black for 3/3 as Fading. Fading something showed up in this set. So a creature comes into play with N Fading counters, in this case 3. Beginning of your upkeep, remove a Fade counter if you can't sacrifice it. Fade counters were later turned into Vanishing counters when we brought them back in Planar Chaos. Everybody was playing Fading wrong. They thought that when you took off your last counter, it went away. Not that it stayed for one more turn after. Like, you have to not be able to remove a counter for it to go. But people got confused by that. This one, by the way, has a remove a Fade counter from Phyrexian Prowler. It gets +1/+1. So the idea is I have four mana for a 3/3. It only sticks around for three turns. But I can make it stick around for less turns and make it bigger. We have Spineless Thug, 1 and a black, 2/2. Spineless Thug can't block. Spineless Thug is one of those cards that would show up in a lot of core sets. And then Spiteful Bully. Spiteful Bully is 1 and a black, 3/3. At the beginning of your upkeep, Spiteful Bully deals 3 damage to target creature you control. You can tell a lot, by the way. Creatures were a lot weaker back in the day. So the idea of 2 mana for a 3/3 and giant downside. It lightning bolts a creature you control. It could be this creature, by the way. Target creature. So at some point, if you just want to kill anything else, you could kill Spiteful Bully. Which is a little bit... Nowadays, when we do black cards, we tend to make it a little more out of your control if you're black. Like, you can't just choose. So probably if we made this card now, we'd say like target non-mercenary or something. Or something where it couldn't target itself. Anyway, now there were a couple of the mercenary fetching cards. There were 3 of them. The cheapest one was Wrath the Intimidator, 1 black, 2/1. It had basically fear. Can't be blocked by except by artifact creatures and black creatures. And for 2 and tap, it got a creature of 2 or less. And then Wrath the Assassin and Wrath Fiend. Wrath the Assassin was 2 black for a 2/2. 1 black tap, destroy target tapped non-black creature. And for 3, you could get something 2 or less. For 3 and tap, it'd get 3 or less. And then Wrathy Fiend was 3 and a black for a 2/2. For 3 and tap, you can get 3 or less. So those are all the ones in Nemesis. Okay, which brings us to the third set in the block, Prophecy. So Prophecy has a few, 6 more. One is it has a white mercenary. Like I said, the very first mercenaries was white. But this is the first mercenary since then. So this one is a rebel mercenary. So remember, the rebels were mostly in white, and you went upward. You went upward to get it. This was a mercenary informer. So the idea, I think, is he is really a rebel at heart, but he's snuck among the mercenaries. So he's pretending to be a mercenary. He's a double agent. Mercenary informer can't be the target of black spells or abilities. So sort of not quite protection, but part of protection. So he can't be hurt by black things. And then 2 and a white, put target mercenary card on the bottom of its own library. And it's a 2/1 for 3 mana. So the idea is it's a rebel that's an anti-mercenary card. But it itself is a mercenary, I guess, because it's high. I guess flavor-wise, it's hiding among the mercenaries. Okay, so of the mercenaries that are left, we had 3 mercenaries, or 5 mercenaries. So a couple things. There's 3 of them that don't fetch. There's Agent of Shaku, 1 and a black for a 1/1. 1 black, sacrifice a land. Target creature gets +2/+0 at end of turn. Sacrificing a land was a theme of Prophecy. That's what's going here. Death Charmer. When Death Charmer deals combat damage to a creature, that creature's controller loses 2 life unless he or she pays 2. There's a mechanic. We had done something in green if I remember the name of it. It was a little a NAS asp that would hit you, and then you had to pay mana, or you sort of took his poison. You had his, anyway, Death Charmer's playing in a similar space. And then Pit Raptor, 2BB, 4/3, flying first strike. At the beginning of your upkeep, sacrifice Pit Raptor unless you pay 2BB. Once again, you can see here, as I go through these, early Magic really played around a lot more with upkeep costs. Like, every turn, you have to pay this cost. Richard did a whole bunch of an alpha, and it stuck around for a bunch of years. We eventually came to the conclusion that they just weren't really fun. It's not that we never do them, but we do them pretty infrequently. Nowhere near as frequently as they were back in the day. Okay, so there's two here that can fetch. I said there was the Mercenary Informer. There's a mirror to it. There's the Rebel Informer. So the Rebel Informer is 2BB for a 1/2. The Mercenary was 2W for a 2/1. Rebel Informer can't be the target of White Spells or Ability, so it mirrors it. And for 3, you put target Rebel on the bottom of his own library. So the idea is there is a Mercenary pretending to be a Rebel and a Rebel pretending to be a Mercenary, and they mirror each other. And then the one card that actually fetches Mercenaries is called Bog Glider. 2BB for a 1/1 flying. Tap, sacrifice a land. Search your library for mercenary card with converted mana cost 2 or less, and put the card into play. So as we evolve along, as we, like, for example, the mercenary mechanic was pretty straightforward in the first set. We saw Sea Hunter and Mog Hunter, which allowed you to fetch other things other than mercenaries in the second set. And the third set, hey, we finally have a card in which it doesn't require mana to fetch things. It still follows the rules that it fetches something smaller than it is. But it doesn't require mana, which is something new. Okay, now we get out of Mercadian Mass Block. Okay, next up, we're into Onslaught. Doomed Necromancer. So 2BB for a 2/2. Black and tap, sacrifice Doomed Necromancer, return target creature card from your graveyard to play. This was a riff. We had done different cards that got back things from the dead. The idea here is there's a card called Hell's Caretaker that I really liked, where you could, it lets you each turn sacrifice a creature to bring it back. This is Hell's Caretaker, but a little more contained, where it's just this creature can sacrifice itself to get something back. But it's pretty powerful. It's actually a bit cheaper now. We learned over the years that if we aren't careful with reanimation, it makes it hard for us to make good large creatures, and good large creatures are fun. So we're a little more careful these days with that. Next up, Goblin Turncoat. Goblin Turncoat is from Legions, the second set in the Onslaught block, and the only mercenary in that set. Sacrifice a goblin, regenerate Goblin Turncoat. So it's 1BB for 2/1. It's a goblin mercenary. So it's a goblin. The reason it's black, most goblins are red, but this one, he's a mercenary. He doesn't care. And he's willing to sacrifice his fellow goblins to help himself. So he's a little bit of a more selfish goblin. Okay, next up we get to Champions of Kamigawa. This is Saviors of Kamigawa. So Saviors of Kamigawa has an Ogre Samurai Mercenary, Sokinzan Renegade, 2R for a 3/3. It's got Bushido 1, which when this blocks becomes block is +1/+1 end of turn. At the beginning of your upkeep, if a player has more cards in hand than any other, that player with the most cards in hand gains control of Sokinzan Renegade. Aha, now I see why you get a 3/3 for 2R Bushido 1. The idea here, essentially, Saviors of Kamigawa was the third set in the Champions of Kamigawa block. It had it cared about converted mana cost, and it also cared about cards in hand. Scourge cared about converted mana cost. Saviors talked cards in hand, how many cards you had in hand was a theme of that set. So the idea is, I have a creature, as long as I have more cards than you, I keep my creature, and it's a little cheaper. Nowadays, we make creatures that are probably close to this without having to have the shenanigans of losing it. But that was the idea. And it was the mercenary part of it was like, oh, it'll trade size, you know. Whoever pays it more, it'll go to. Okay, next up we get to Ravnica, the original Ravnica City Guild. Sellsword Brute, 1R, 2/2. Creature, human mercenary. When Sellsword Brute is put into a graveyard from play, it deals 2 damage to you. Once again, you can see sort of like nowadays we make 1R, 2/2 with upside. This is a 1R for a 2/2 with downside. This is before we decided to do that. And the idea here is like, okay, I get it, but wow, when it dies, it deals 2 damage to me. Okay, next up, this is from Conspiracy Take the Crown. Crown Hunter Hireling. It's an Ogre Mercenary, 4/4 for 4R. When a Crown Hunter Hireling enters the battlefield, you become the monarch. Quan Hunter Highland can't attack unless defending player is the Monarch. So the idea there is only when he works for you, only when you're the king will he work for you. That's very cute. I like that. And it's just trying to get a lot of different cards that care about the Monarch in different ways. The idea that it gets the Monarch for you but only listens to the Monarch was kind of fun. Okay, next up from Dominaria United Commander, Robarian Mercenaries. As you can see, by the way, there's if you remove Mercadian Masks, there's only been 21 mercenaries before Outlaws of Thunder Junction. So there's not been tons of mercenaries. There's a bunch in Outlaws of Thunder Junction. There's a whole token and everything. But of the Outlaw things, this is definitely the one that we've done the least amount. You can tell I'm already up to Dominaria United. Anyway, Robarian Mercenaries, 3 and a white for 3/4, human mercenary, vigilance. Robarian Mercenary has all activated abilities of all legendary creatures you control. Dominaria United had a legendary theme. We like a lot to play with legendaries in white. White being sort of caring about legendaries and helpful with legendaries. So the idea of this one is, okay, I get all the activated abilities. The reason it says activated abilities is if we say normal abilities, like evergreen abilities or keyword abilities, that's really hard to find. We have to list them. That's why if you ever see like, oh, if they have flying or first strike or lifelink or death touch, you have to list them out. So this was a little easier to put because you can list activated abilities. Okay, next up. Jedid Ojanin, Mercenary. This is also from the Dominaria United Commander deck. It's the first, I mean, it's a white-blue card, but it's the first blue Mercenary. Oh, no, it's not the first blue. We've seen blue Mercenary. We haven't got a green Mercenary yet. We'll get to one of those. Jedid Ojanin is from Legends, a character long, long ago. And he is one white and blue, 3/3, legendary creature, cat mercenary. Whenever Jedid Ojanin, Mercenary, another legendary creature, enters the battlefield under your control, you may pay green. If you do, create a 2/2 green cat warrior creature token with Forest Walk. So he actually does have green in his, he doesn't have green in his mana cost, but it's the first mercenary to care about green. And you kind of, and then for his color identity, because green's in the rules text, he's got a white, blue, green color identity. And he makes green cat warriors because he himself is a cat warrior. Yeah, I think that was done because they wanted to make him a three color. I think the original Jedid, let's see, let me check this. I don't think I can do at home that I can't do. Yeah, the original Jedid Ojanin was just white and blue. But one of the things is they talked about being a cat warrior and forsaking the forest, but it was a little bit weird not to have green in him. So I think this card, they found a way to get green in him. Okay. Next up, we get into Fallout. I don't know Fallout. I'm not a Fallout player. So I will speak to them as Magic cards. I will not speak to them as the IP. I don't know the IP. I'll just talk about the design. So Wasteland Raider, 2BB, 4/3, squad 2. As an additional cost to cast a spell, you may pay 2 any number of times. When this creature enters the battlefield, create that many tokens that are a copy of it. When Wasteland Raiders enter the battlefield, each player sacrifices a creature. So once again, we talk about the themes of things sacrificing creatures. Squad first showed up in the Warhammer 40,000 decks. This is the second time we used it. I do think Magic, in-universe Magic stuff will eventually use Squad. It's a very cool mechanic, and so I have every belief we will use it one day. Next, Thrill Kill Disciple. 2 and a red. It's got Squad, 1 discard a card. So, not only, this is a squad that has an additional cost. I'm not sure whether this is the first time we've done additional cost in squad. Most of the ones I remember from Warhammer were mana. When Thrill Kill Disciple dies, create a junk token. And this doesn't define what a junk token. A junk token, I think, lets you impulsive draw. That lets you take the top card of your library. And I'm not sure whether it's till end of this turn or next turn. Let's see, can I look that up? Let's see if I can look it up. I can't. When I'm driving in the car, I cannot look things up. We'll see if it lets me look it up. It does not. So, okay, I'm not quite sure what a junk token does. I know it's impulsive draw. I think it's one tap sack, but I'm not 100% sure on that. But the idea with these is the squad cards are nice is being able to make multiple copies of them. And so this thing, if I want to make a bunch of copies, now given I have to discard cards to do it. But I can sort of help me generate more cards. The idea is each junk token sort of is a card draw. I mean, you got to be able to use it, but it's card draw-ish. Okay, next, Gunner Conscript. 1 and a green for a 2/2, creature, human mercenary, trample. Gunner Conscript gets +1/+1 for each aura and equipment attached to it. When Gundam Chronoscript dies, if it was enchanted, create a junk token. When Gundam Chronoscript dies, if it was equipped, create a junk token. So one of the themes is the idea of having things get our aura or equipment on it. So this card was obviously designed to play into that theme. And one of the things we like to do sometimes is do a card in which we cross themes, like if you care about auras or care about equipment. They're similar, they both attach. And so this card sort of says, hey, you can play auras with it, you can play equipment, and if you want to optimize, you can play auras and equipment. But it is just sort of crisscrossing the streams. Auras and equipment are so close that we do like overlapping them where we can. Okay, and our last card of today. Oh, I realize I've been rushing through to try to get there. I'll do a few thoughts at the end of this. Is Kellogg Dangerous Mind. 1 black-red for a 3/2 legendary creature, human mercenary, first strike in haste. Whenever Kellogg Dangerous Mind attacks, create a treasure token. Sacrifice 5 treasures, gain control of target creature for as long as you control Kellogg. So one of the things we like to do whenever we create artifact tokens, be it treasure or food or clues or blood or whatever the case may be, junk in this particular set, one of the things we like to do when we make tokens is we like cards that give you alternate reasons to use that token. Now, sometimes we specifically name the token by name. Sometimes we'll say stuff like sacrifice artifact. But one of the ideas that we like is if a set uses a counter in a larger way, an artifact token, we like having things that can make use of that. So the cool thing about this is, hey, every time he attacks, you make a token so he can generate tokens. And then you have a goal, right? Oh, if I get enough of them, I can steal something. It's tied to how long he's in play. That's a control. So the idea is maybe I can steal over time a bunch of creatures, but the out is always if you get rid of Kellogg, then you get your creatures back. And that is it's one of the things you always have to answer when you make a card is what is the answers to the card? If the card can do something that's pretty powerful, we want to make sure. And so stealing creatures can be quite powerful. And it's possible in a deck that just, there is ways to generate a lot of treasure. And so the idea of I'm constantly stealing things, because getting 5 treasure, it's not nothing. I mean, it is a hoop to jump through. But in a deck dedicated to doing, it's not hard to get a decent amount of treasure. So there's a nice answer inherently there. Now, he's also legendary, meaning that if he's your commander, you can get him back, but you'll lose everything you gain control of when he dies. Okay. The remaining things here are stuff upcoming. I'm not going to get into Outlaws of Thunder Junction. But what happened was, real quickly, I'll just talk about the Mercenaries Outlaw of Thunder Junction as a whole. I'm not going to get into the cards today. When we were looking, we knew that we wanted sidekicks for the villains, right? Having sidekicks is a big part of being a villain. Originally, we were looking at doing Minion. Because Minion is the name, when you talk about like villains, henchmen, villain is a name that you often will use for that. But what had happened was we went to the creative team and Minion is in this weird space. Minion is what we call supported, which means we don't take the cards that are Minion and make them not Minion. We support it. But we've made a conscious effort not to make new Minions that... The creative team is asked not to make new... So there's a conscious decision not to make new Minions. And so when they came to us and said, okay, we'd rather not make Minions. Could you do something else? We went back and gave them a list of things. And Mercenary was nice. The reason we liked Mercenary was, at the time, the thought was we'd make a token that was only that creature type and nothing else in the set would be that creature type. And Mercenary was nice just because there weren't a lot of Mercenaries. And it allows us to identify the token. We thought Mercenaries, a name, was pretty good for the sidekick because villains, you know, pay people to come work for them, obviously. And then what ended up happening was when they were designing the set, we would tag things whether they were outlaws or not. And basically what would happen is the creative team had to then give them flavor. And warlocks were only spellcasters. So only if you were able to do magic were you a warlock. And assassins had to kill something. Only if you killed the creature. Pirates really had to have the flavor of pirates to them. And then there was mercenaries and there was rogues. And the idea was, they could all be rogues. But they thought, you know, we have mercenary. And they, you know, if you work for money, like if you are hired for money, let's just make that a mercenary. And, it, you know, rogue is more like I'm a ne'er-do-well, but not necessarily that someone's hiring me. And so they made that division. So a lot of the creatures in the set ended up being a mercenary. So Like I said, it wasn't planned, but stuff like that happens. Anyway, guys, I hope you enjoyed this sort of jaunt through the Mercenaries of Magic. Like I said, there's a whole bunch of more mercenaries coming. And there's a brand new token and everything. So anyway, I hope you guys enjoyed this look through Magic's mercenary past. But anyway, as I've run out of mercenaries, and B, I'm at my desk. We all know what that means. It's at the end of my drive to work. So instead of talking Magic and mercenaries, it's time to be making Magic. I'll see you guys next time. Bye-bye.